there, welcome to Famous Last Nerds, your one-stop pod for all things pop culture. Thank you for joining us. I'm sorry it's been a little while since we've recorded something, but we are back now, and today we're going to be doing our review of The Last of Us Part 2 on the PS4. We don't get to do as many gaming episodes as we'd like, so this is a little bit different for us, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is. It's quite a rare one. We talked about the PS5 last time. I don't know, back in 2012, it feels like.
That was many, many moons ago.
Yeah. And then since then, we've had an Xbox showcase. We've had a few games kicking around trying to end this generation. And we still don't know what's coming off the PS5 in terms of price and dates. But I think if they're closing out the PS4 on this game we're going to discuss and Ghost of Tsushima, which I wanted to say correctly, they're doing a pretty good job of things, aren't they? Let's be honest.
Yeah, well, in the last couple of months, we've had arguably two of the best games of the entire generation. So like you say, if this is how they're closing it out, it's not exactly the worst note to go out on. And I found this with the 360 and the PS3 as well.
Yeah.
Just as they start getting ready to sunset the consoles, that's when they start really finding the optimum performance and the best way to use all the hardware and all the power that they've got at the fingertips. And then of course they have to start from scratch with the next gen. But
yeah, I've not played Ghosts. Obviously we're going to talk about this game today, but I mean, looking at both of them, just from what I've seen, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder why they need a new console, really. And I'm not trying to, I know there's a lot more to it about, you know, switching of frame rates and lack of loading time. But if we get into the technical stuff about The Last of Us, it plays probably like a next-gen game, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? It looks and feels and plays, you know, lack of loading screens. I don't know. It feels like Naughty Dog have just absolutely nailed the technical capacity and just absolutely done everything in their power to, you know. And the same with Red Dead Redemption 2, actually, if we want to go back a little bit, because I played that again a little bit. And although the story in that, I kind of have issues with and how long the game goes on and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of the environments and how alive it is and how everything interacts and, you know, bar the long loading screen at the beginning, it's pretty incredible. Do you know what I mean? So they have really maximized what they can do on this generation. So it's quite exciting to what they're going to do next, really.
And Naughty Dog did say, didn't they, that was one of the things they focused on, was getting rid of the loading screens as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because they wanted people to stay immersed in the game. Not every time you walk through a door, you have to sit there for 20 seconds and then something jumps out of the dark at you.
The classic Resident Evil door loading screen.
Yeah, yeah. The way it just completely takes you out the moment. And in a game like this that is so, you spend so much of the time completely on edge.
Yeah,
it completely ruins certain moments, doesn't it? When you walk through a corridor or something, and then you go,
well, I mean,
sort of get yourself picked back up again and get back.
I remember
into
the footage from E3. So obviously, coming into this, the hype on this game is obviously off the charts.
Well, yeah, it's been 7 years in the making.
7 years, exactly. But and things like that, when you think, oh, you know, 7 years, this and that, I think they did 2 years of just formulating a story that they thought would work. You know what I mean? Like it's like a film process. This is like the biggest sequel to a film ever made. Do you know what I mean? So it's this giant
thing they
project.
Could never be accused of doing is rushing into things.
No, certainly not. I mean, you look at, so I've gone back and been playing some of the Uncharted games. So I played Uncharted 4, and I'm pretty much finished Lost Legacy, which is obviously not a long game.
Is that the one that was like 4.5?
It's actually probably more like 6 or 7 with cutscenes.
Is that the game that's like takes place with his daughter?
It's not his daughter. It's the South African one who was one of the villains in 4.
Not played that one yet.
You'd really like it, actually. It's really good.
Read, though, that it's only very, very short. People were outraged that it was like £30 when it came out.
I think it's enough of a game in there to justify the money. Because it is, right. Again, it's just like a movie. Do you know what I mean? That like it plays out really well. It leans a bit into Lara Croft territory, which is understandable. Because, you know, female antagonist and all that kind of stuff. Or female hero or whatever you want to call it. But actually, it's great, man. And it just kind of shows what Naughty Dog can do, because they learned a little bit from, you know, Uncharted 4 and that game just both play out extremely well. And they're both like 3 years old now, 3 or 4 years old now. So, but it's one of those, you just look at what they're doing in terms of games with the motion capture and the, just the advancement and the character acting. Because Laura Bailey's one of the characters in that game, in The Lost Legacy. Because she plays Abby, if I'm right in thinking it. Yeah, so obviously she's quite a prominent, you know,
the mocap in this is unreal. So we've obviously got Ashley Johnson back as Ellie, and I'm a big fan of hers from Blind Spot.
Yeah.
And then Shannon Woodward, who most people probably know her from the first season of Westworld.
It was amazing that, you know, with her, she knew the... I think one of the writers or the producers of the game from the time they worked together on Westworld. So it was a producer on Westworld, and they were friends after that point. And she said, "Oh, you know, what are you up to? What are you working on?" And she said, "Oh, you know, I'm working with a game studio." And she said, "Okay, you know," she said, "I'm quite a big gamer, you know, so," and which one? And she's like, "Naughty Dog." And she's like, "You're not working on a new Last of Us game by any chance?" And she was like, I can't tell you that. And Shannon was like, "Well, if there's a chance of getting me a job on this new game, I would love you forever." And she went in and read for it, and she was more than happy to do that. And they said when it happened, her reading, everything went wrong. The lights, the fuse blew on the office studio they're in, or the theater, or wherever it was. Everything went out, and they just had to improvise. And they said it was one of the best auditions. Druckmann said it's one of the best auditions they've ever had, or the best. And said they basically gave her the part, but made it a bigger part because of how good she was, I think.
Wow.
So I think they just, you know, expanded upon the role.
So she might not have been reading for Dina.
I think she's reading for Dina, but I don't think Dina was anywhere near. I think she was a part in Jackson, but I don't think she was a main part of the game as she's become since, because I think the game has evolved a lot in the planning process. They tried and errored, trial and errored so much stuff. I mean, I've soaked up literally all the content post this game. There was a kind of official podcast which went through the first game, and really well produced thing, unlike ours. Joking, it was a really well produced, loads of interviews, you know. Yeah, but it's a professional thing. It's done in line with the game by Sony and stuff, but, you know, interviewing Druckmann and all the other people and the actors involved and things like that. And it was fascinating because, you know, the process of this game is unlike anything I've ever heard of before. I mean, you know, you're a massive fan of the Assassin's Creed games, as I used to be, and those kind of games. And, you know, a lot goes into those games, but they churn them out in a kind of crazy amount of volume. Do you know what I mean?
It's very formulaic.
Yeah. And something like this is literally storyboarded out, and then all the mocap, and then all the acting. And then, I mean, they built this whole world. Obviously, it's not quite as open world as people might have thought it was going to be with Seattle, and we'll talk about that. But they did so much.
It's not exactly a closed world, is it? It's not as though you're sort of constantly bumping into fences and thinking, "Oh, I've only got this one way that I can go." It's still very, very open world. It's just not, you know, Red Dead.
I mean, people said that.
Literally just wander for an hour.
No, I mean, people said that coming into it, that, you know, that they dropped a certain amount that people could play when they were pre-reviewing stage. So they did that hospital sequence where you're Ellie going into the hospital and you see her, you know, obviously stab the girl in the throat playing the PS Vita and then kind of make her way. I mean, the person playing was pretty much flawless. But, you know, I took that approach completely different to what they did, because I'm far more timid a player than they were, because they're obviously more accomplished. So I was a bit more stealthy.
And they've probably done it about 50 times
anyway. Yeah, there is that as well. Yeah, exactly. But I'm a bit more stealthy. They were kind of doing the mix of stealth and then aggression and all that kind of mix of gameplay, which is what it lends itself to. But there was 3 entrances or so, I think, into that point, until you meet the main room. And then it's obviously a little bit more linear during that chase sequence and whatnot after that. But that's the thing with this game. As much as people say, "Oh, it's a linear-based game," there are usually more than one way you can go. There's certainly lots of safes and things you can miss along the way. So it's, you could rush through it and miss really important sections and really important stories.
Yourself by not getting things. Like, one of the first things we talked about was when you get to Seattle, was you said to me, whatever you do, don't forget to get the second holster. And I've already seen the pet store, but you said to me, go around the corner, it's like two blocks
down,
and
get the
make sure you get the key. Because, and it does, having those holsters makes it so much easier. And there was one later on in the game when there was a safe,
second rifle. Yeah,
there was a safe that was locked in a garage, and it was blocked by a dumpster.
And I was going to say, do you know the story behind that one? So, you know, in that area of Hillcrest, there was the story of the guy with the bow and arrow, who eventually you get the bow and arrow from. So he was like a local guy, and he locked all those people in alive. So those five. But the thing is, if you don't read those letters, if you don't read those notes, you don't understand that part of the game. And that's like another, you know, this game had so many layers. I mean, I'm amazed how many people were writing letters in post apocalypse.
Apocalypse in world. Shortage of biros.
No, I know.
Like there's loads of sellotape. There's loads of scissors, and apparently loads of Bics floating around.
It's one of those. You go into a hairdresser's, you're like, at least I'm going to get scissors here. Do you know what I mean?
Because you know, scissors from the hairdressers. You get as soon as you go into an office building, you're thinking, right, there's a shitload of sellotape in here.
Yeah, and mechanics. You get all your mechanics. You get all the all the bolts and all the things you need for weapon upgrades. So,
but they had something like that in the first game. There was a character that kept being mentioned. I can't remember what his name.
No, I can't. No.
And then you found that underground den. And then it had like a nursery and everything, and you found out that there'd been this whole civilization. But again,
That was the sewer system. That was where the nursery was.
And there was this nursery with books and toys. And if you'd not read any of the notes up to that point, you wouldn't have understood the significance of it. It's just
That's the kind of thing that I think people have got lost. I mean, we'll probably address the controversy around this game pretty shortly when we get to the kind of main story points, but people kind of miss what is so incredible about this game outside of all the main story stuff and all the things we'll talk about. It's just the intricacy, just the detail. I mean, you look at the other Naughty Dog games, and Uncharted's a really popular series and really well handled and really fun to play. But all you do there is you collect the odd treasure. Do you know what I mean? You're playing a story.
And you don't
It plays
have
out.
To.
No, you don't. Not at all. And here you don't have to, but for your survival, it helps to be a little bit more thorough. And for your enjoyment of the game, like you said, you learn about that guy. And I think there was throwbacks to the guy from the first game. Is it Bill? I can't remember the guy that... it kind of was sheltered off from communities and laid all those traps. And do you know what I mean? And you met him. And this harkbacks to all that kind of stuff as well. But it's so subtle in there.
The story, doesn't it? When you see all the little things they've put in the background, it just makes you appreciate it. And
yeah.
It makes it a little bit more real as well, because people would be writing letters to each other because they had no other
like
way of communicating.
Joel's house, where he's got a leaflet he's got the flyer for the museum, he's got the brochure for the museum, you know, that you pick up when you go in, the one he takes Ellie to. And he's got things about space in his house, and he didn't have an interest, but he knew Ellie did. So much attention to detail. I like the Easter eggs in having the PS1 and PS2 consoles and the Vita and stuff around people's houses and all that kind of stuff. I like all those Easter eggs. They're really well done. But I think that the real attention to detail and the fact that the characters shout each other's names, you know, when they're in battle. And there's a detail to this game that I don't think I've ever seen before. And I know Red Dead has got a certain amount of that. It's obviously GTA as well in the past. But I think this is just next level, because it's there for you if you want it. I think in Red Dead you could easily miss it. I mean, I came across the KKK because you kind of told me about it in Red Dead Redemption, and obviously, you know, hunted them down and whatnot. But there's things like that I think you could miss in Red Dead because it's such an open world, you know. Whereas this, it's kind of all there for you. You don't have to look intensely hard, but as long as you take your time and be thorough, then you understand it, and it makes the story more complete. Do you know what I mean? It just makes it a more immersive experience, as you said before. So that's what I think people are kind of forgetting about this game. It's just the level to level of detail in a game that is actually quite long. I mean, it's not an open world, don't get me wrong, but it's 25-30 hours worth of gameplay in a very incredibly, the whole environment is almost interactive in 30 hours. That's almost unheard of. I mean, it probably is, really.
Well, that I, as you said, the way I've played it, I would say I'd probably put about another 10 hours on top of it, just because every room I go into or every building, I check every room, every drawer, every cupboard, because I mean, you know how much difference it makes, doesn't it?
It does.
If you find one extra bullet, that is literally one extra dead body that you don't have to melee down, or, you know, it's one less time you need to shit yourself when something's running at you.
And if you can find one extra shotgun shell, you know you've got a better chance.
Especially when you start getting to the bloaters, and God, what are the new ones? The
shamblers.
Oh, the shamblers. I keep calling them lurches, but I mean, those things, Jesus Christ.
Well, bloaters, I mean, were infinitely harder. And if you don't have shotguns for the stalkers, man, I mean,
I've lost track of the number of times I shit myself at those. Not the normal ones, because the normal ones are kind of predictable because you can lure them out. It's the one jump out the bastard wall.
Oh, mate.
The number of times I was walking past and want to jump out, and I would literally jump about 3 foot off the bed and then have to quickly stab one.
We'll get into that, right? So me and you are not horror game players.
Definitely not. No. This has just proven it for me. If I ever had any lingering doubts, this has just killed them off.
Yeah. So, I mean, in some ways, I kind of thought, you know, Resident Evil games are like 8 to 10 hours. You know what I mean? So they're not as intense. And I used to play Resident Evil games as a kid. I played 2 and 3 in particular, but I never played 4. And I kind of saw 1 being played, but I don't think I ever played it.
I played the first 3 that I remember playing quite a lot.
But I never really enjoyed it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not something that would give me a buzz. But it's strange. I mean, I love the genre. I love horror films, but obviously we're both fans of the zombie and post-apocalypse kind of genre. So this game is basically perfect for me in terms of storytelling and what it's trying to say, which is why I'm so excited about, you know, the HBO series, which... it's going to be something else, I think, given that it's HBO and given
especially after this now.
Well, Chernobyl guys are behind it as well. So they've got the Chernobyl producer and writer and director to do at least the first episode. And that's high caliber. I mean, Chernobyl's won all the awards.
The suspense in Chernobyl was just unreal. And putting that into... there's a lot of those elements that will carry over in terms of the way 100%. They built suspense.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have to be scary. It just has to be suspenseful, doesn't it? Where,
well, I think the first game wasn't really scary. It was just the drama of it. Do you know what I mean? It was just the suspense of it. And then those lighter moments of like Ellie humming and obviously the giraffe sequence and all those kind of things you loved about the first game. And I still think those things are still there in this game. I mean, everyone will tell you how bleak this game is. And obviously the brutality, the fight sequences and what happens is just insane. But it's kind of, it's such a more realistic take than, say, The Walking Dead, where everyone's got automatic rifles. And, you know, I know there's a lot of guns in this game, but there are times where people come at you, like the Seraphites come at you with, you know, handmade weapons. You know what I mean? They come at you with battle axes and all the things that they can actually forge and make in a society they have. You know, so it would, you know, whereas you've got the army, you know.
When you're walking around and you find things, you don't go into a building and find a whole clip of ammo. You find 2 bullets, and then in another bit you might find 1 shotgun shell.
You find a bit where someone's died, or someone's maybe... taking their own life, and they've got a couple of bullets left in their gun. Do you know what I mean? It's
and that the jackpot. I remember saying in one of our group chats, I forgot how it makes you feel. You have that heart sinking hatred when you open a drawer and there's nothing in there.
Oh God! Yeah.
And then you have that huge rush of endorphins when you open a safe, and there's like 4 or 5 different things, and you're thinking,
and you can craft a Molotov or something.
Yeah, you get a Molotov or another health kit, and you think, oh my God, I'm like a king now.
I know. And it did do that in this game. It rewarded you at times where you could go into a firefight with actual ammo this time, because they knew they wanted to mix it up and make it not just
like the Rat King.
like that. And
I
obviously,
I've never been as tooled up in any of these games. I was actually turning away ammo. I had every
full.
I had all my things crafted, and I killed that fat fuck so easily. But if in the first game, that would have been impossible.
It but the intensity,
like checking up people's arseholes for bullets.
The Rat King battle itself wasn't that hard, as you said, as long as you were quick on the dodge, because it was a one grab kill. But it was such a clever sequence of the build up to that. So that section of the game, through the building with the stalkers and the bloater with all the clickers in that narrow corridor, I found harder, to be honest. So that section was, and you got a flamethrower obviously, but that section was pure horror. Do you know what I mean? I don't think this game has done that. For you know, there was a sequence in the first game when Joel fell to the basement in the hotel and you had the first bloater. Deal with, but the bloaters there were nowhere near as hard as they are now. Do you know what I mean?
That's the only thing that comes close to this, but like you say, it was proper suspenseful going around that hospital. Because every time you opened a door, something clicked or something whirred, and you'd hear all the things screech. Yeah.
Well, and you could see the Rat King behind his shadow behind that door, the locked door.
And
at
you
that
could
point.
Hear this godly noise. But then every time you use your super hearing, nothing's coming, and you're thinking, "Well, what's going on? Why are they all screaming?"
Until you turn the power on, you know.
You
then
know something's coming, because whenever you can hear them but you can't see them, you know that sooner or later you are going to step on something or open a door, and all hell's going to break loose.
It was just, that section when you've got the things coming out the walls, you've got the four clickers and the bloater at the end of the corridor, and
that took me a few goes because
me too.
I had to work out a strategy. Yeah. To get everything in the right way so that nothing else could hear me. And it took me probably 3 or 4 goes.
Yeah, because I've seen people play this on YouTube and stuff, and people are amazing with stealth. I don't think this game is entirely built for stealth as people like to think it is. What it's built for, even if you saw the gameplay demos and whatnot, is it's stealth to a degree and then kind of all-out warfare. And then it's retreat if you need to and find a stealth point again and then go on the attack again. It's not just stealth kill everything, because it just doesn't allow for that. It's not supposed to be played that way. And actually, if you watch all the best footage of it, the way people play through it is the mixture of stealth and then chuck a bottle at someone and create panic and then Molotov's this. And you've obviously got to have the weaponry. That's the key with it, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I found myself in some battles running out of almost all ammo. And having to really be so careful just to try and get some ammo just to finish off a section, because I wasn't that wasteful with it, but things don't go down that easily always. Do you know what I mean? It's
sometimes you go for a headshot and you don't quite catch it. And then somebody knows you're there. And especially one thing that was different with this from the first game is having to change the way you play to suit your opponents. Because obviously when you've got the infected, they're a lot more, they're easy to predict. They have several patterns.
Except clickers.
You know, you can run up to the blind ones, the runners. You can run at them because they're deaf as a post. But the clickers, you know, you've got to just barely touch the controller, because if they hear one shuffle, they turn.
They're blind, but they can hear extremely well. So they obviously turn on you extremely quickly. Runners are kind of nothing. Stalkers are awful because they retreat everywhere, so you can never get a handle on them.
And they're silent as well. Once they've retreated and they don't show up on your hearing.
I know. You're so reliant on that.
The people are the wolves especially are so reactive, and when they've got the dogs, which we both said was an absolute fucking nightmare with the dogs.
Yeah, it is.
And then when you have the Seraphites in, and they're completely different.
And they're whistling and clicking, and you don't know where they are and what they're doing, and oh my God.
And the fact that these arrows that stick in you, and they do lasting damage, so the longer it takes for you to pull your arrow out, the more health you lose. So
I got a lot better with Seraphites up until a certain point, but I think I struggled a little bit with them with Abby, because I like my bow and arrow and I got really used to using that. Yeah. And the crossbow is similar, but it's different. So it was tricky.
It's not
to
the same power.
No, it was an awkward thing to use.
Always. Wherever you hit someone with an arrow, it's a one-shot kill. with the crossbow, you've got to get a headshot. And some of them are wearing helmets.
I know.
But again, that again forces you to change your dynamic because Abby's got different weapons than
Abby. And it was a clever thing by that. I mean, we'll obviously get into that, but it was a clever thing that they gave you a basically Joel-like section of the game with Abby because she has a similar punching and creating chivs. And she's, heaven forbid, actually give her a combat knife because she's a soldier. Do you know what I mean? Like, of all the materials you can get.
I was most frustrated with when I started out with her. No matter what happens with Ellie, you've always got a butterfly knife. Yet this woman's this buff soldier who comes from a compound with thousands of rounds of ammo.
Oh,
and she doesn't have one single permanent blade.
I know.
But in a way, it was kind of nice to go back to that way of crafting shivs because it was a nice throwback to the first game.
Yeah, exactly. And she doesn't get as targeted as Ellie. You know, she can hold off a clicker. You know, whereas Ellie, if you get caught, you get caught. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's one of those things. So it was a very different way of playing. My only issue, and it isn't, and I'll just kind of get my only issue with the whole game, actually, is that reset of going from Ellie to Abby. And we're going to get into all the spoilers and all the everything else. My big issue is just that it kind of reset the game again. And I like the telling of her story, so you got it quickly to know what happened and why she's, you know, why what happened with her. But, you know, resetting it as in, it kind of made you learn again. It's like when you're starting a game over and it's telling you how to do stuff. Do you know what I mean? It felt a little bit like that with her, but that soon kind of faded. Do you know what I mean? It was quite quickly back into the action and quite back, you know, into normality. I think once you'd spoken to who was the bad guy who wasn't really much in it, to be honest, her boss or whoever it was.
God knows. I know what you mean, the really militant fella.
So he was the one, he was voiced by your guy in Westworld, which I can't remember his name, which is great because I can't remember anything. He was going to be in the next Batman film as commissioner.
Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, so he voiced that gentleman, we can't remember. So you'd think he maybe originally in a bigger cut maybe had more to do, do you think, because a big voice actor and a big actor playing a role, because he was it Felix? I can't remember. He didn't have much to do in this game anyway. But you had a cut scene with him. Kind of
he was just basically like Abby's daddy figure, wasn't he? Of don't do this, oh, I'm going to go and do it. And then he comes to bail her out anyway.
Yeah, but so a couple of bits, maybe a couple of hours into Abby's gameplay, and maybe before you're introduced to Lev and Yara, it was a little bit like, yeah, feels a little bit labored again, but that was the only point in the game. And then after that point, it was just incredible again. Do you know what I mean?
Listen, really,
and they really ramped it up. Do you know what I mean? They ramped up, like we talked about the horror section of the game, but then they ramped it up, and obviously you get towards that huge fire and burning buildings and ride on the back of a horse and that big firefight in the factory and all the stuff that went down. It's just carnage towards the end of the game. It was such a different experience. So in a way, it almost gave you two games. Do you know what I mean? It didn't feel like one real game. It felt like when you're playing these two different characters, you had two different games almost, you know what I mean, like simultaneous. And I think the way they weaved all the stories in together was just like nothing we've ever seen before, really. I thought it was very,
very special the way they did that, and it did something that I can't remember many games or even many TV shows and films in my history that have ever made me really care about a villain as much as that made you care about Abby. Because when we first get introduced to her, it's of course, oh my God, she's killed Joel. Joel is the ultimate hero of the post-apocalyptic world. She is Satan's butthole. But then you get into it and you really start to understand why she feels like that. And at the end of the day, she casts a spotlight on Joel. Joel wasn't a nice guy. You know, Joel did a lot of questionable things in his history. And sadly, he knew it was going to catch up to him because he knew that he'd pissed off a lot of people.
When you meet Joel, and just to put it out there, that Jeffrey Wright's character was called Isaac, and I just needed to say that on there. But when you met Joel in the first game, he was a smuggler, really, wasn't he?
He was a trader,
he was a smuggler, he was a bit of a dickhead. Yeah,
he had no interest in taking Ellie across, but he only did it to that woman who died in the, was it the Capitol building or something?
Yeah, he was just closed off emotionally. Like, he had no...
Oh, he was dead inside because of the death of his daughter, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
He could tell he was refusing to get close to Ellie because he was worried that the same thing would happen.
Well, he's refusing to get close to anyone almost. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like his whole, obviously him and his brother had separated, you know, and parted ways. And, you know, yeah, Tommy's an interesting character. We will discuss Tommy because I've not heard Tommy discussed all that much. It was Tess who was the major.
Tess, that was,
yeah. So it was Tess.
When she died. You never actually, I think you saw her get shot. And then you had to hightail out the building and there was...
Yeah, so it was in that major building when you first... it was in that major courthouse. Oh, no, maybe the courthouse is in this one. But anyway, it was that big, big building, round central building. It was the first kind of major sequence with all the soldiers. And you had to basically, hot foot it out of that area and just kind of keep going. And it just became more and more. It was really different. You know, the Joel then was not what Joel became because of what Ellie provided to him. Do you know what I mean? But that was almost a second life for Joel. He was obviously still living out his existence and trying to protect Ellie. You could see that in this game because he kept checking up on her, you know, talking them out of her going on certain patrols. Do you know what I mean? Doing certain things.
She was constantly telling him to back off and that she didn't need him to be like that anymore.
And I mean, she didn't. If you look at how skilled a fighter she is because of how he trained her, basically, she can handle it more than handle herself. She's probably a better fighter than him.
She's been with him for years.
Yeah, it's 4 years. Yeah.
So she's picked up everything. She's a really good fighter.
Might be 6 years. Is she 19 or 17 in this? Yeah. She was 13 in the first game. So I think either she's 17 or 19 in this one. But she certainly had a lot of years with Joel. And you went through all those experiences in the first game when she was on her own. Obviously hit winter. And she had to fight while Joel was, you know. Oh, God, man, those guys. They were just something else, man. They were just something else. Just intensely scary, the whole sequences. Because that in the first game was a shock, you know, playing as Ellie. It was a real big adjustment period because she didn't have something like the dodge mechanic, which is, for me, the biggest change in this game is that dodge mechanic, where it just makes you look more agile. Do you know what I mean? It makes you can do things that you couldn't do in the first game. It makes sense with Ellie, because she is more agile. She is more, she can climb. She can't climb like Nathan Drake, thankfully, because that would have been a bit too uncharted. But she can certainly do more that Joel couldn't do in the first game. And it was good that they did away with a lot of the ladder stuff and the moving of those crates. Do you remember that? Because she can't swim and now she can, all that kind of stuff. So those problems in the first game.
The stuff with ladders was really irritating. The only times you had that was, there was a few, wasn't there? But it wasn't one of the huge major mechanics in the game.
And they threw a raft or like a pallet thing back for Abby and Abby and Lev at one point, I think. Yeah. So it, you know, there was that was a little bit of a throwback rather than, oh God, here we go again. Do you know what I mean? So I think they learned a lot from what maybe didn't quite work in the first game, although it's practically perfect. You know, there's still always going to be a few of those things in games. But I just think they really made use of what Ellie is now. And I just thought the whole opening sequence was just incredible. Obviously, you get that incredible shot of Jackson. You get a kind of real quick sense of where Ellie is now, you know, who Dina is as a kind of antagonist, she's a bit cheeky. She knows how to be controversial in and amongst Jackson. Do you know what I mean? She's kind of stirring the pot a little bit in those. And it's just an interesting take. So you get to play as Ellie initially and you get to understand where she is and what she's gone through. And obviously in the build-up to this game, you know you're going to be Ellie because it's a revenge story. But as much as I thought Joel was going to die, I didn't think it would anywhere near be as soon as it was in the game.
No.
Was going to revenge Dina because it felt like that in the trailers. Obviously that's misdirection and they've done that quite well. But I genuinely thought she was going to avenge someone else she'd gotten closer to rather than it being an all-out Joel revenge story.
I wasn't sure that he would die at the hands of people.
No.
I thought that maybe Joel was going to be a little bit older and a little bit slower, and maybe because of his relationship with Ellie, he's got a little bit softer. And maybe he went into a room and he was more focused about protecting her and something bit him or something like that. But I wasn't expecting to see him die within the first couple of hours like that.
No, and I genuinely thought there might be an element of Ellie, you know, maybe seeking out Fireflies to try and sacrifice herself. Do you know what I mean? Something along those lines.
I did wonder about that because I was very pleased the one sort of hanging question they had from the first game was, did Ellie believe Joel when he said they said they couldn't find a cure or there was loads of other people and stuff like that. And it was good the way they broke that down into like three or four different cutscenes until she gets to the point when she literally says, I will never speak to you again. I will hate you forever if you don't just tell me the truth.
I know.
And she clearly hates him for what he's done, but she says, but I can work past it. And it was
That was the night before he died. So, I mean, it's nice that, I mean, that's the ending. It's nice that you had that resolution, though, between them, because that was the doubt in all of the cutscenes and all of the, you know, you just didn't know where they were at the point, you know. And she's his dad. No other way about it. Do you know what I mean? So you can't spin it any other way. If you're in that situation, what they've gone through to travel across the country, halfway across the country, with no means of traveling halfway across the country and doing all the what they went through in the first game. And both of them went through because she saved his life as much as he saved hers. Do you know what I mean? It was very much, you know, she literally did during that sequence where she kept him safe and got the antibiotics when she had to go through hell. And fight her way out of that town and as you said, all the cannibals and oh god, that was such something else in that first game. But it all led to this. And it was interesting that you got to play as Abby initially, because at no point did I think you were suddenly gonna play as her again. Do you know what I mean? I just felt like, oh, this is interesting. They've just thrown another character in the mix. You know, maybe you'll get to play as different factions or maybe you'll do something different in this game. But you know, for Abby to be saved by Joel and Tommy and go for all those things, she's just stumbled across them. I know she was looking for them, but she kind of just looked out and stumbled across them. But for then to her to suddenly turn on them, you had no idea why. So of course you're going to hate her. Do you know what I mean? You're going to hate her because she's killed someone you've grown so fond of or most people loved from the first game. So it was a very bold move to try and kill off your favorite character, which obviously came out far before the game was released and had all these cryboys on YouTube were putting people off buying it, which clearly hasn't happened.
It's now the fastest selling PS4 exclusive with 4 million copies in about two weeks, in a matter of weeks, which broke Spider-Man's record of something like 3.5 million, and that in turn broke God of War's record, which was about 3.1 million. So, you know, they obviously, like you say, they didn't do a very good job of putting people off.
No, and the thing is, a game is not told by one storyline. And what did people
expect coming into this?
What did people expect? Did they just expect another nice road trip? Do you know what I mean? Because even if you want to model this on a film, right, the closest comparison is probably Logan, because it's the kind of, you know, similar kind of characteristics, you know, obviously done in a different way because we've got to know Wolverine over many more films than one game, but similar kind of adopted daughter-ish story, you know, kind of fractured relationship. And he obviously dies at the end of that film. Did you really expect, you know, if there was a sequel, they're not going to bring him back. Do you know what I mean? Not in the same way. And who knows what happens with the X-Men and whatnot in the future. But, you know, this game is a follow-on, but they weren't just going to do the same story again.
If they'd spent 7 years making a sequel and then they'd come out with literally The Last of Us 2, because bearing in mind it's classed as part two, isn't it? I like the fact that they build it as part two, because that makes me think instantly more it's a continuation of the story.
And
it's
feels like chapter. That. Yeah, it feels like a chapter.
It's not just a new game, only now Ellie's a young woman instead of a kid. Now she's looking after Joel a little bit more. That it would have been enjoyable, but it still would have been a bit of a, from a story point of view, it would have been a colossal letdown.
And I think if they'd just gone a straight revenge as well, if they'd cut it off when you've hit the aquarium with Ellie and then get to fight Abby, and if you were Ellie fighting Abby and that was the end of it, I think you'd feel robbed as well. I mean, it wouldn't have been
a lot more flat, because you wouldn't have understood Abby's motivations or anything.
And it wouldn't have rounded Ellie. No,
But at least you can sort of understand Joel killed dozens and dozens of her friends.
And innocent people, ultimately, because the doctors were not bad people. They were doing something to try and save humanity. It's not like they were.
What they were doing, he sacrificed billions or millions of lives for one girl. So, yeah, you know, in this particular instance, Joel was the bad guy.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly unfair that he got his comeuppance when you think, if you take all the emotion out of it, what he actually did, Joel was a shit, but yeah, he did it for love.
But we'd all, I mean, as a father point of view, we'd all do the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Of course we would. And he says, his line in this is, if he had the chance to do it all over again, he would do exactly the same thing. Yeah. Do you know, he wouldn't change it.
You wouldn't expect any different, because it would have been really, it would have ruined Joel's character if all of a sudden he said, you know what? No, if I could go back, I'd leave you on the operating table. Because then you'd think, well, you've got no conviction in your beliefs then, if you'd give yourself up just because she's pissed off at you.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't do it to be light. He did it because he thought it was the right thing to do. / he did it because he didn't want to be alone again.
Yeah.
He's a very, very flawed main character in this. And to a certain extent now, so is Ellie. Ellie has got massive flaws.
Oh, she's broken. She's
so destroyed. But she's an incredible character.
Oh, I mean, if we're just singling out characters in gaming terms, you know, and there's some great ones, and, you know, obviously Assassin's Creed changes each time. I know you're very fond of Ezio and various different ones. And, you know, and there's other people over the years, you know, incredible characters in gaming. But I don't think there's anyone I can kind of relate to as much as Ellie, in terms of she's just got so many likable characteristics, but she's got so many
layers. She's like an onion. You think you understand her, and then another layer comes off and there's something completely different. And she's got so many different strengths, and then so many different weaknesses as well. And they all just play into each other in this really strange mess. But what comes out of it is a truly compelling action character. You know, you wouldn't expect an action game like this to be centered around a teenage girl.
And it's just, there's a couple of sequences. I mean, as I said with Dina, she is amazing in this. Do you know what I mean? I mean, as a character, as a kind of platform for Ellie, I think she's phenomenal. But that sequence post-Aquarium, or was it not post-Aquarium? It's post-Nora after the hospital, when Ellie comes back to the theater and takes the top off, and you see her back is just covered in bruises, and she's battered and beaten, and she doesn't want this life. She's not doing this to get enjoyment. She's doing it. She doesn't know probably at that point why she's doing it. It's just a sole focus of revenge.
That's
you know what I mean?
Their way of life, isn't it? It's like, I've gone this far. I've got to see it through.
Yeah, she can't not see it through. And there's a couple of points where, I mean, actually, she was gonna call it quits with Tommy, do you know what I mean? They were going to go home after they hadn't found Debbie after the aquarium, because I think what she'd end up doing to the girl, is it Mel, that was pregnant, and just finding that out, it just broke her. Do you know what I mean? She just had nothing left to give. And she would more than happy to go home. But it's obviously at that point when Abby storms in and it flips the switch and you then become Abby. It's just such a change in dynamic at that point.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, the gameplay, if we talk about our favorite sequences with that, and then we'll talk about some of the flashbacks and cutscenes and kind of overriding stuff about Ellie and Joel really towards the end. But I think Killcrest was probably my favorite sequence. But that said, even when you first go into Seattle, I thought it was phenomenal. You know, just that open, expansive world. I mean, what they've created in terms of landscape, from the snow at the beginning to that kind of, you know, post-apocalyptic Seattle, which feels so real. Do you know what I mean? Like constantly wet and difficult and hard. And, you know, you've got the storm sequences when you're on the boat and at the aquarium. And then you've got that amazing scene at the farm at the end with that sunset, and just like, how they've created a game that looks, and even Santa Barbara as well, you know, with the you know, on the beach at the end, and that difference and feel. They've created so many layers and landscapes and stuff, which I know has existed in games before, but every one of those locations just felt entirely real. Do you know what I
mean? I would probably say Seattle, just because, like you say, when you get, because it's all been quite contained, hasn't it? You're going through the security checkpoints.
Yeah.
And everything's all tents and barbed wire fences. But then when you first get to Seattle, you get past that last checkpoint.
You can ride around on your horse and explore.
Huge green expanse.
Yeah.
And it's just incredible. And you start picking out, well, that used to be a building and there's a wall and there's signs. And yeah, that, like you said, the world that they've crafted is so huge, but at no point does it feel like you're hemmed in.
No.
It's not as big as you would maybe like it to be, but then the game would be like 100 hours and it probably would have taken another 7 years to code it.
I've heard Druckmann talk about this. So they toyed with making it proper open world. But the problem with that is it wouldn't really build any suspense, because the whole point of this game is linear parts of it are to build the story and the suspense as it goes along. Do you know what I mean? So if you didn't have that, where would the suspense be? If you did a mission and then you could roam around 5 hours the other way, it wouldn't build any tension. Do you know what I mean? So I just don't think it would have worked. But I did love that they had it at the start of the game, when obviously the story isn't as ramped up at that point and it is a bit more about exploration, because it's Seattle, they don't know. And as the game develops, obviously they start marking things off the map. Do you know, when Dean is listening on the old comms in the theater. So it's smart how they develop that. But Hillcrest is probably my favorite section of fighting in the game. And also the sniper battle with Tommy when you're Abby, I thought was really, really well done. And it felt a lot like Metal Gear Solid, which I kind of loved. But you know, the sniper section with Abby when you're chasing down Tommy on that bridge is just amazing. But the Hillcrest stuff for pure action, was so well done.
It's literally every time you go around a corner, you don't know what it's going to be. Is it going to be people?
Yeah.
Is it going to be infected? What kind of infected? Oh, I've got to go into this building. Oh shit, there's a bunch of them, but who is it? And oh no, everyone's in here. So you can't really rest on anything. The only thing I like about it is you get the very subtle cues that tell you when action begins and ends. So if you drop into a building or you go through a door and you draw your gun, you know something's going to happen even before you've seen or heard anything. If the character pulls out a weapon, something's happening. And then at the end, they usually have a verbal cue, don't they, where they'll say,
they do.
I think that's all of them. Or is anyone left? No. Yeah. And you know that you can sort of go,
I mean, there's some amazing ones with Abby post the hospital when she says, thank fuck that's over, or whatever she says. And she breathes a massive sigh of relief, just exactly as you'd done, because you killed the Rat King and then you had to kill that other one that separated off. And he was annoying because he was on fire running around all over the place. Yeah, I mean, he didn't cause you any damage.
I knew he was coming. I knew he was coming, but I was crawling in that air vent and then all of a sudden he fell down. God, I should be sending Naughty Dog my underwear bill, because they owe me several pounds. They
skid
really
marks
do.
For days.
Oh yeah, skid marks. Joe, new Twitter name.
It was. I mean, like we said, that the action, even if it's not with infected, and we got to mention that underground sequence. You know, post the TV station or whatever it was, the radio station, TV station. You know, when you run into the underground and you first meet Shamblers under there, and it's so enclosed and so tense, and then you've got to run out. And it did that a few times in this game where you had those running sequences.
Huge chase sequences. I mean, you had one very early on, didn't you, with Abby?
Yeah.
When you
with Joel and just before to Joel. Yeah, you had to jump the fence and whatnot.
You had one bit where I got stuck and I died because I couldn't see that there was a gap in the fence.
Yeah,
but you know what? I reckon I can take some of these. Oh, I was so wrong. I think I got two.
Yeah.
And then I just got absolutely torn to shreds.
The game soon tells you if you've gone about it the wrong way.
But
a death sequence in this is quite forgiving. It's more it's more like a plot point or a story point than it is like a one of those ninja games like Sekiro or whatever, where it's a hard reset and you've got to go back to a checkpoint and start it all over again. This is a story you're guided through a little bit. It's not about dying constantly, but if you do, it doesn't really matter. You could be 20, you could be two people into a battle of 10, and it would still spit you back out at the same point where you've killed those two. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't reset it. And I like that about this game.
Are very, very, very good. I mean, literally, as soon as you kill someone, it saves. I was watching it a couple of times when you get when you're doing some of the bits with the Seraphites. There's one bit where you're you come out of an underground bit and there's like a swampy area.
Yeah.
And I killed someone with a bow and arrow from like the other side of the map, and it auto saved it.
I know.
And I was catching it, and because I wasn't really paying attention for the rest of the game. But like you say, it just makes it so much easier, so you don't think, oh, well, I've got to go and kill that one.
If you go back to that point, and you've got next to no ammo, and you've got to kill another 10 again, and it's like, God, I've already taken out four of them, and then I've run out of, you know. It was really well, it was forgiving, but it was the right kind of forgiving.
And it forces you to learn, doesn't it? If you've been dead careful outside, but then you've bobbled your way into a building and all of a sudden you've been spotted, when you come back you go, right, shit, okay, that's where that guy was, so he was on the first floor, so I want to try and do this. And it does, you know, you like you said, you might die two or three times, but you don't start thinking, oh God, I'm really shit at this. You just think, I've been really careless there, I've got to be more careful.
Wants you to be a little bit careless at times, and a little bit more careful at other times.
It makes it frantic, especially when you've got infected and clickers. They are the definition of frantic, because as soon as one of them gets you, that's it.
There's a couple of those underground sequences, you know, where you are in the hospital and you throw the bottle and all those clickers chase after all the
you're chasing
Nora. Yeah, exactly. And that sequence is amazing.
And there's another one as well when you first go down into the underground railroad.
Yeah.
And you said to me, because I just dropped into it, and you said, throw one bottle. And as soon as I did, you went, and everything comes out. And I lost about six enemies, and I didn't do anything. I literally just threw a bottle and then just sat off laughing. The best thing about it, though, was when you said to me, and it was dead cryptic, you said, unleash the infected. And I didn't know what the hell you were talking about until I got to that bit with the swimming pool.
Yeah.
I was trying to kill them, and then the little on-screen prompt came up that said undo chain, and I went, that's what he meant. So
you shoot the chains as well, actually. But yeah, it's really cool. Because you can just unleash the clicker on a whole house full of those guys in Santa Barbara.
You sit there and just listen to the screams, and then you go, oh, it's gone all quiet.
Those scenes are amazing. They're amazing, those sequences, because you can watch it play out. You know, you can watch the whole thing. It's really cleverly done, because I know it's not real world, but you do stuff like that in reality of things, wouldn't you? You would try and turn one against the other while you would sneak off the other direction. You know,
especially when you've got limited ammo. If you were sitting there with hundreds of rounds of ammo,
fine, take them all out.
It's going to mow everyone down. But when you're looking, going, well, I've only got four shotgun shells, and I don't know when I'm going to come across any stalkers.
Yeah.
So I want to keep hold of these. And, you know, okay, yeah, I can use one bullet to blast the chain off, or I can just be really careful and undo them. And you know, you save yourself rounds of ammo and loads of health packs.
I actually really had good fun with that whole last section of the game.
That section was probably one of the most fun. There's not many of them.
Well, I was more accomplished. They gave you a lot of ammo to play with. So I just had a field day. Yeah, I had a field day at that point. I was just absolutely on fire with everything.
It's like, soon as you run out of ammo for one gun, you go, right, well, my next one's maxed out, I'll just use my handgun. Right, onto the shotgun, onto the bow and arrow. And I was doing things like shoot someone, make them come into a hallway, and then I just put a trip bomb. And then you come in, the trip bomb goes when someone else comes, throw a smoke bomb at them. And it was brilliant. But like you say, it's because you knew you were getting right to the end, and you knew you could just let loose a little bit.
And then it did that a few times. Like I said, it ammoed you up at the right times of the game. It did ammo you up quite heavily before the bloater in the arcade as well, because I think you kind of knew something big was coming.
You always know something's happening when every room you go into, you're going, huh, shells. Now I've got three health packs and three molotovs. Why are you doing this to me? Then you fall through and you go, oh fuck,
But that's not to game. Say we're making it sound quite easy. But it wasn't. It's not all that easy though. The game, it has a lot of tough moments where it does really force you.
I think it's a lot harder than the first one.
100%. I played the first one a few weeks before. Infinitely harder than the first one. The first one had moments I really hated. They had a version of the Stalkers in the first game when you first drop to that hotel basement and you have that bloater when you switch the power on or the generator. And that's horrible because they're just running around. They're a different version. They've changed them entirely, but that's what they called them in that game as well, Stalkers. And they were just erratic and difficult. And you had that and the bloater chasing after you. And it's just like, I don't have enough guns for this. I don't have enough ammo. And then that whole underground sequence when you got three bloaters in a row towards the end of the game was quite a tough thing because there's so many clickers and whatnot there. But I was much better this time around playing it because I'm, you know, because you remember it.
Mechanics, don't
you? Yeah, exactly. But the first game doesn't have as much difficulty. The parts with Ellie are a bit tricky because it's quite spaced out, you know, and there's that sequence where you've got, again, the sniper in the end house and you've got to work your way down through the houses. That can be a bit tricky because of ammo and stuff, but nothing like this. This had a lot more to it. I think the sections with Abby, you are more equipped, but they're still really good fights. You know, there's a lot of Seraphite fights. You know, there's that one just before you go in the high rise.
The first time you meet the Seraphites, I thought was very, very hard because you're walking through that park and you can hear them whistling and then all of a sudden you get shot with two arrows out of nowhere.
Yeah, arrow through the shoulder and you've got to pull it out. Yeah,
and then they just come at you out of the woodwork. And I probably spent about 10 minutes doing that because I was literally crawling around the whole area on my belly, crafting silencers, just popping them in the head or drawing them over somewhere and trying to shank them.
I was pretty good at that point, but I don't know why. I struggled with Hillcrest, I think, because it was a little bit, you know, before you meet Jesse and doing that crazy, what is like an Uncharted car sequence, which was a load of fun. I mean, that's such an intense moment in the game.
Times when you're actually able to just unload on everyone.
Such a release when you can shoot ammo as much as you want. Do you know what I mean?
You're not thinking, oh, no, we need to keep me bullets because there's probably a shambler coming up.
But that sequence just before that was intense because you would kill off a load and then you'd have another section in Hillcrest that dropped down slightly. And then you had that building where they smoke bomb you and you've got to kind of battle your way out of that just before you meet Jesse. So it did do really well with ramping up the tension in these buildings and the hardness. It got really tricky on those sections. I think
Ellie had some very, very hard bits. One of the most disappointing bits of any section was when you're getting ready to go off somewhere and either Dina or Jesse or Tommy goes, right, well, I'm going to go and do this thing. And I'm going, no, because that means I've got to go on my own.
Yeah, me too.
You
I
can
felt
draw
like that.
Fire off and I can just throw bombs at people and have a laugh. Now I've got to do it all carefully.
It does make you, and as a gameplay experience, I kind of played it in 2 to 3 hour intervals. Yeah, I didn't play it in long sessions like some people because it's so intense. Do you know what I mean? You are so focused on what is going on.
I think I had one.
You did towards the end. Yeah.
I think I had one day when I did about 6 or 7 hours. And there was one of them where I'd been playing it on and off all day, literally having breaks for showers and food. And I just got to the end of it and I just had to go and play FIFA because I just needed something lighthearted to just give me a break. Because it's so much of the storyline. You feel your shoulders drop because you've been carrying this tension. Because you just don't know what's around the next corner, what's in the next building, if you're going to fall through a floorboard. And
there's a weight. There's a weight because of each of the characters. I didn't really, because you're so into it, I didn't really feel, you know, when it's calling out the names of each character, I didn't really feel that impactfulness. But it's more the, God, what is going to come next? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. What God, ungodly thing am I going to face next, you know, especially when you got to Abby, because when you got into the Skyrise section was so well done. Obviously she hates heights and she's going up those rickety bridges.
Oh, that made me feel sick.
And Lev is just skipping across them, which I thought was really quite charming, because Lev was another incredibly kind of a bit Ellie-esque. Obviously that's why they may be introduced, but obviously completely different storyline and background, but similar kind of playfulness. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly.
Then going over the sky bridge, they do it dozens of times a day, whereas obviously for Abby, even without her fears, It's a rickety wooden bridge, hundreds of meters in the air.
And she's certainly not as light on her feet, and I'm not calling her, but you know, she's obviously extremely well muscular and
stocky.
Yes.
Compared to like a preteen child.
Yes, exactly. So it's a slight difference in approach. And that section where you slip and then you get into that building and then Lev can't come and needs a gas mask, and you just know something's going to go down. So as soon as you get the gas mask, you've got all those stalkers, and there's you going down that building and you've got a shambler, and then you get the flamethrower and all those things keep jumping out the walls, and you just like, this is never going to end.
Yeah.
And after all that, you think, okay, this is okay. Then you get to the hospital sequence, which a lot of the hospital, nothing actually happens. It just ramps up the tension. Obviously, you have to kill a few clickers once you turn the power on, but then it's just the Rat King stuff. But the Rat King was an amazing battle in the build-up to it as much as the actual fight. So when you're in the ambulance getting the med kit, and you have to smash your way out the window and run and barge through a door, and it breaks through the wall like the Kool-Aid guy. And then you just have to keep going and going and going. And it's like, this is amazing. And it grabs hold of you and you've got the axe and just smash.
My heart was
just
racing during that chase.
Mine was.
Because like you said, it's not like with a lot of other things, one hit and you are ripped in half. So yeah, you've got no room for error. And that's the bit that really makes the fight so tense.
Yeah.
Is you cannot stop. It's literally fire a shotgun shell, move, throw a Molotov.
Because the flamethrower is a slow process. So it's quite a tricky thing. And throwing those grenades, it's not like a Molotov where they've got a bigger area. They have to kind of land and explode. And it's quite tricky to get right
with
sometimes.
The flamethrower, it keeps coming. It's not like the other ones where they just stop. It keeps coming. So yeah, you might use it a little bit, but you've got to be so on
those explosive ammo, explosive shotgun shells are just the dream, man.
Oh, they are unreal. They are like god level ammo.
Yeah, they are amazing.
The Molotovs are just.
I miss the Molotovs when I'm Abby. I miss the Molotovs when I'm not Abby. Yeah, it's
like you said, it's the area. It's not Abby. You can throw a bottle.
Yeah.
Or three or four clickers over there, and then you can get them all with one Molotov.
I know, it's a dream, and without the Molotovs, I wouldn't be able to play these games. I don't think I just couldn't do it.
That was the thing that saved me from disliking the first game.
Yeah,
was when somebody said to me, "Don't use shotgun shells for anything other than infected. Save shotgun shells for the big guys." And as soon as I started doing that, I just got the game, because I was trying to take them down with pistols, and I'm like,
you were.
I've got 8 bullets, and they've just bounced off them, and they're laughing at me. 2 shotgun shells, they're fucking dead, you know, one straight in the head of a clicker.
And in this game, you had moments where, you know, you needed that shotgun so badly, or you needed a certain weapon. I remember the quite famous E3 demo, which was the kind of terrifying moment,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
the story.
And in this game, it never quite lived up to that, but he did still, that big guy burst through the door, do you know what I mean? And with this massive axe, and then a couple have followed him, and you had to really take him on, and he was just relentless. He was kind of nemesis levels of just nonstop. But I thought actually, you know, for them to get those kind of sequences into the game, and you had a couple with Abby, you know, where you had the largest terrified lady with a big axe, do you know what I mean? Who?
Oh God, yeah.
You know,
that was really hard.
Yeah. And you had that moment when Abby had been strung up and then didn't have a weapon, and you were getting attacked by all the stalkers, and you have to just dodge attacks and stuff. You know, there's tough moments in the game where it takes your reliance on a gun away from you.
When you've been saved by Lev.
Yeah, Lev and Yara. Yeah, exactly.
She's knackered as well, isn't she? So she's not even moving properly. She's limping and holding aside.
You have such tricky, and it does clever things where it goes, you're used to Molotovs and shotguns, I'm going to take them away from you and just
have
let
a
you...
stick, a pointy stick.
It makes you think on your feet. It makes
it
you
makes
use
you
the
always
things.
Change the way you play.
Yeah, which is great.
Very, very clever, and especially it does that when you, as I was saying before, the different engines for the different bad guys. When you've got the wolves, you can't just hide around a wall and throw at the wolves, because they will flank you.
Yeah.
And you hear them giving instructions, don't they? I'm going to go through this house, or she's still up in that room. So you've got to always...
And then the dog gets your trail, and then you can't backtrack and you can't do this.
You can't just sneak up on them if they've got a dog, because the dog will sense you before you get close. And then as soon as it's got you, that's it, you're fucked.
I just had to get rid of the dogs as quick as I humanly could, because they just scared the life out of me.
I've carried that over into Ghosts of Tsushima as well. As soon as you see the dogs, you've got to get rid of them.
Yeah, it's like that in most games. It's that kind of moment where it just, you know what is going to trigger an attack, and you try and stop it happening in its tracks. I mean, it was really cleverly done that, you know, all of that aspect of the game, it mixed up your, as you said, your style for each kind of section of the game you're facing, whether it's Abby or Ellie. And I just thought, it's so clever. Games aren't normally that
when
smart.
It's Abby versus Ellie.
Oh, God.
Very hard.
I mean, that mirrored the section from the first game when you're in the bar and it's on fire and, you know, you're with that guy that I can't remember the name of. You know, the leader of that cannibal party.
Yeah.
I'll try and look up his name, because it's someone famous that voiced him. I can't find it now. But it was one of those things where his battle was quite similar, where you had three sections where you had to kind of run away from him and hide and then attack when you could. Do you know what I mean? So it was quite tricky.
And you've got to be very patient, haven't you?
Yeah.
It's all about waiting for the right moment. And because one of the first times I tried I'll just throw a brick at Ellie, but she dodges it and then she knows where you are. So she just blows the shit out of you with a shotgun or with a pistol or whatever. So you've got to be so, so careful, and you can't get too close. Like, you had to try and get her, I think, while she was reloading a gun, or if she was using the med pack, they were your best chances to get her while she was playing in her rucksack.
Even on the third time when she's putting down bloody trip mines, isn't she, on the third go around? That guy was David, I remember now, and he's voiced by Nolan North, who voices Drake in Uncharted. I remember they gave him a villain. Yeah,
he's one of the most prominent voice actors.
But it was great that they just kind of included, and that's the thing with this game, they're using creme de la creme in the first game and in this one. Troy Baker's obviously amazing as Joel, but, you know, got to give props to Ellie and how well, you know, Ashley does, you know, Ashley Johnson does the voice, because she does young Ellie in this and she does grown up Ellie. Do you know what I mean? She does both sides of it and she does everything in between. It's just quite phenomenal. I mean, we talked about, you know, that section with Abby and Ellie is just unbearably tense, because you're fighting Ellie and you're like, what am I doing here? Do you know what I mean? I don't want to kill Ellie.
Backwards. And like when you actually get on top of her and you have to start battering her, you're like, am I gonna kill her?
And it doesn't let you not go through with things, you know. No. If you stop, you can't stop. And obviously then Dina storms in and gets an arrow from Lev and is about to have a throat slit, until Lev kind of acts as the voice of reason, which is a little bit like Ellie to Joel, isn't it? So it does mirror a lot of that.
Like the conscience.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, oh, this is unbelievably tense. And after all that, you get a brief section of calm. I mean, we'll talk about a couple of the flashback scenes before we talk about the ending. So probably my favorite sequence in the game is the museum, which I think is probably one of yours as well.
That was my favorite part of the whole entire game. Nothing really happens, but I came out of that and I felt like I just had a nice warm meal, because I just felt so good about myself. That all the things he does when he you know, with the dinosaurs, because he knows he loves them, and then they get in the lunar
you get the hat and you can put it on all the different dinosaurs, which is amazing. And
well, then I managed to get a screenshot of that. I threw it on one of them and I took a nice photo of the three of us posing.
It's just a great sequence. The whole thing in that museum, obviously the build-up to it when she climbs on the dinosaur's back, you know, before diving in the water, and it's just amazing. Like, it just gives you just go back to that charisma and that kind of innocence and stuff that Ellie has that none of the other characters have, because they've just grown up extremely hardened and tough. And, you know, that's why Jackson was interesting as well, wasn't it? Because you had different types of backgrounds for characters like Dina, who hadn't had Ellie's horrific background.
Yeah, she's asking her, like, what was it like?
Yeah.
She's only ever known this life, but so she doesn't remember all the before stuff, whereas obviously Ellie does.
Yeah. And they're innocent to the modern world when they ask things about, do you wonder what it would have been like for this and that? Do you know what I mean? I thought that was great. There were some really great moments. But Ellie in that moment when they're in the museum and it's quite calm, and then that sequence with the space, the helmet on, and she puts it, you know, and you just know the trouble he went to get that, because they obviously, you know, and it's just such a moment. It's like, how can they take you out of a game, which was presumably just from a really tense, difficult scenario, into this and just completely switch you off and engage in everything that's going on? Like, it's just really impressive stuff. Like, it's so, so good, that sequence. But then it turns to tension again. Obviously, it stumbles into the wild boar in the end, but you think there's going to be, you know, infected, and it just, it always keeps you on your toes.
Go again.
Yeah.
It's going to be a wave of clickers, and it's just a pig. And then Joel bursts in. He's like, is everything okay? Are you all right? And she's like, yeah, it's fine. It's just a fucking pig.
Yeah. And it's just great. I mean, she's so likable as a character.
Young Ellie, no matter what, is brilliant, because she's so carefree. She doesn't give a shit about anything. Like, he tells her to be careful. She just jumps off into the water to swim across. And he's like, there could be anything in there. She's like, yeah, but it's fine. You know, I'm just going to go in here and I'll do whatever. And it's nice to get a reminder that she used to be this carefree kid.
Yeah.
Because, of course, by a few years later, she's got the weight of the world on her shoulder. She's on this cross-state mission of vengeance.
Yeah, I know.
And she's living with the knowledge that the entire human race is potentially doomed because her surrogate father figure decided to save her life.
And so she's, for all the problems with her, she's coping pretty damn well. Do you know what I mean?
Like, she hasn't blown her own brains out, so she's doing remarkably well, because a lot of people, probably the guilt of that would have killed them.
The other sequence and the things that kind of tie Jelly and Ole together is the guitar. So you have moments.
Did you say Jelly and Ole?
Did I? No, I don't think I did.
You did.
No. It's been a long podcast. No, anyway, it's the guitar, obviously. And, you know, he's told her in the first game he's going to teach her, and you get to this game and he taught her how to play guitar.
And building guitars, because he's such a badass.
He's such a cool guy. I loved his house, you know. It's just such a cool house. But yeah, he teaches her to play guitar, and you have that cover of Take On Me when you're in the music shop. I think it's a music shop. Yeah it is. But that's another thing that if you weren't careful, you could miss it. It really isn't on the map. Do you know what I mean? It's not on the route through you're going. You could have missed that section. You can miss the music shop entirely in Seattle because it's in the big district. And then obviously she plays in the theater, which, you know, cues that flashback. But it's just that connection that Ellie's got.
And then you have that scene right at the end when she's trying to play minus the finger.
It's the most, she's going to have to learn to play left-handed, let's put it that way.
I saw it when you see her walking around the house, and I'm thinking, oh God, oh, I hope she's not taking your guitar. Then you find it and you go, oh crap, hang on, how's this going to work?
And the last shot is the guitar, and you see her walking away in the window in behind. And
again, I took a screenshot of that, and that was breathtaking. It was the end of a film.
Yeah, and it is, like, that's why
a playable film.
Yeah, the first game is the best story ever in any game for me. That's why it's nearly one of my favorite games. If you know, it might not be the best game ever, but in terms of what it delivers as a story and a gameplay and a package,
there's not many games that beat the first.
There isn't for me. And look, I love things like Horizon Zero Dawn, but the story is a bit generic in parts.
It's a bit wishy-washy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's anything where they throw in magical, mystical, and it's a little bit told before, and we've seen it before. Tomb Raider's a bit predictable. Obviously, it's in its 17th incarnation or whatever. The Uncharted series is very popcorn, but obviously they can make a movie out of it like they are doing. But I think this tells the best story. I think it's, you know, these two games as a complete package tell a quite incredible story.
And it feels, of all the media versions that we've seen of the the old trope of, oh, it's the end of the world. This feels like one of the more plausible ones.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you were saying about The Walking Dead. There's people aren't just walking around in small groups with huge quantities of ammunition. For the most part, most people have got bugger all. Nobody's got anything to eat.
In a battle, you'll have the odd big gun, right? You'll have the odd shotgun, but you'll mostly have pistols and hand-to-hand combat weapons, even in some of the hard fights.
Dead has got like an M14 with 18 full clips in a rucksack.
Exactly.
And it just goes to show they were so lucky the way they managed to park up where they did in Jacksonville, somewhere not just with houses, but somewhere with actual working power and running water, whereas a lot of people are living in tents. And I loved where the Wolves were staying, the way they're living inside a football stadium.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a realistic with generators and actual ammunition. And
because it's the kind of thing that you'd think somebody would do, because it's heavily fortified. You know, there's very few ways in and out. Nobody's going to be climbing over the walls. It's difficult to see into.
Yeah,
it makes perfect sense. But then you've also got like the Seraphites, who
are living a farming community.
Yeah, they're almost living in squalor compared to...
Well, it's essentially like a... I mean, it's obviously a religious-driven... What might have been once an innocent religious-driven thing has become this kind of...
Because Abby ribs them, doesn't she? Like, she's saying, you don't have electricity, but you've got lifts.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but they live such a different way, and... They live, you know, with farming implements, and they, you know, work the fields and crops and bows and arrows, as you said. And it's such a different feel, all wooden housing. And it's a lot what would have happened. Different communities in a post-world thing. It's not that removed from Jackson. It's just got that element of, you know, cult.
They're a bit more old-timey. And yeah, of course, there's the huge cult vibes with the...
Yeah, exactly. And all the things. I know all the quite graphic scenes, like... Yara getting her wings clipped. Is that the way they described it?
Yeah.
I know.
I think that was going to be one of those scenes where they might cut away and you just hear the screams, but nope, full on sledgehammer to the arm.
Yep, they didn't cut away from anything in this game, I don't think. No, they didn't pull any punches. And I think that puts some people off, but I think that's a fair point of what it would be like in you know, it's sad to say, but in that post world, do you know what I mean? And everything depicted of post world is violent and
well, it's
horrible.
Dog isn't it? If resources are limited, if it's you versus someone else, it's a case of who blinks first, and whoever blinks first generally in these kinds of situations dies a horrific bloody death.
And it's nice that they don't shy away from that, because they're not trying to tell a popcorn tale of what it might be. Do you know what I mean? They're trying to tell
us, like, oh, we live in this civilization in such and such a town. Oh, well, we've got electricity. Why don't you come and live with us? It's like, no, we're going to blow you up and steal your shit. Ah, no, we're going to blow you up and steal your shit. Because that's what it would be like.
Yeah. I mean,
trying to make friends.
The sequences as well, obviously mentioned other bits. So the parts with Abby and Lev, I thought were really good. I thought Lev was such a kind of interesting character and really well developed in the short time they kind of had. Do you know what I mean? So I thought they really became quite a likable character.
Proper little badass as well.
Oh, yeah. Amazing with a bow.
Shot with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
And really, really helpful to having your corner.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. And that was, you know, you need that in a game like this. You need support, because it's not always that easy.
And
you know,
the way Lev teaches Abby as well, you know, she starts off constantly ripping on the their religion and constantly saying, what is it she calls them scars all the time.
Yeah,
and Lev's constantly correcting and saying, you know, Seraphites. And then later on you see Abby starts picking it up and she refers to them as Seraphites.
Yeah.
And you know, Lev has clearly had a big influence on Abby and has kind of humanized all this shit that's been going on.
As she humanizes Abby, she makes Abby more approachable from a player's point of view. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you can see Abby is a flawed character, obviously cheats. Owen is actually a nice guy in all of this, which he didn't think coming into it. Do you know what I mean? Owen actually wants to get away from all of this because he hates what's gone on. And I think when they were Fireflies, they were largely innocent. They were just trying to help stop the end of the world, or as it already is. Do you know what I mean? They were trying to reverse things and make things better. But he'd become quite disillusioned with all the battles with the Seraphites and what had gone on, and what he'd done with the aquarium and made it his home is just to get away from it all. Do you know what I mean? But their relationship, they had opportunities to run and be happy, and Abby just couldn't get away from the revenge. Do you know what I mean? She couldn't stop looking for Joel, and it kind of ruined her, as it ruined Ellie, as you know, in terms of the revenge story, and kind of proved to both of them that revenge isn't the answer. It just wasn't the answer for either of them to find any kind of redemption. But ultimately Abby maybe had found that in Lev. And obviously, you know, after all that went down, there's obviously the Seraphite section when they're on the island and everything's on fire and it's just absolute carnage. Do you know what I mean?
That was probably my favourite combat area, because that was ruthless.
Just next level insane. Like the factory was amazing. You could just fight your way through it with all your ammo, and it was a really good battle sequence. And then after that, you got the horse and you just kept going and going, and then you met that giant dude who's just like, oh my god, there's another guy who's fighting me, because Abby lost the backpack as she was squeezing out, so she lost all her weapons except a pistol. And it was just like, this is just endless, essentially. It's just absolute carnage. But post that point and post the battle, you know, with Abby and Ellie, you felt like you were coming on a conclusion of the game. So, you know, you hit the farm section. And I mean, it was nice to see Ellie have a life. Do you know what I mean? For that briefest moments, obviously the cutest kid in gaming history, JJ, Jesse Joel, or Joel Jesse. I'm not sure which way around.
Jesse Jr.
Yeah. And you sit on the tractor and you have the potato song. And I don't know, there's so many nice little moments in there. And then you cut to Ellie in the barn having post-traumatic stress disorder, and her whole world is upside down.
Oh God, and, yeah, those flashbacks were so vivid.
Because it's her going down to Joel and him screaming, and it was obviously much more exaggerated than what happened in the game itself, in the actual sequence. But she can't switch off. She can't get past that. And obviously Tommy comes to stir things up, and she just can't let it go. And I think it's sad, because Dina can live a normal life. You know what I mean? And Ellie had the opportunity to, you know, to live a normal life to an extent in that.
Just as you were saying, the exact same way as Abby, both of them had the opportunity to live happily, to get away from all the death and the
blood. Abby tried to
can't stop fighting.
Yeah, she couldn't do it at that point, but Abby did find a freedom, but then obviously got stung in Santa Barbara by the Rattlers. Is that what they were called?
Yeah,
the worst fraction of them all, I think, in the game, that just string people up and just do horrible things to them. And it was an interesting end to the game, because you almost found happiness with Ellie, but ultimately she was never really happy. She'd not put it to bed. And it wasn't really until that quite horrific sequence on the beach, which I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. Do you know, it's just, they were going blow for blow. Abby is like a shadow of what she was, obviously 50 pounds lighter and just wasting away, basically. Ellie loses a couple of fingers.
Ooh.
It's just such a difficult sequence to play. But ultimately, she sees Joel and realizes maybe, you know, whatever it is she realizes is that this isn't the answer. Do you know what I mean? This has only caused
heartache. At the end of the day, it's not going to change anything, and her life would have been so much better if she hadn't gone after Abby.
Yeah.
And she, I got the impression that she realized that if she just let it be, because even she knew that Joel wasn't a good guy. She knew that Joel had done some shit. And if she'd had that presence of mind earlier on, she could have been so much happier, and her and Dina could have run off together and could have been a lot
happier. I think she felt robbed by the time she didn't have with Joel, where they were happy again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think because you saw that sequence where they were about to, she was about to forgive him, and they were about to get past it after all that time. It felt like, I think it was a couple of years or something. It's, you felt like finally, you know, they were going to have that time together.
We're going to be okay.
Yeah. And she'd just been robbed of that. And because of all he'd done for her and she'd done for him in the first game, in the first part, I don't know, you can understand her motives, but it, as it went on, she became less and less of who she was. Even in the sequences with Dina, where they're still chatting and still have that relationship, and they still do in the farm, do you know what I mean? They still have the moment where they're playing the record and dancing in the kitchen, and it feels like she can have a life there, but she just can't let go. It's just, you know, Tommy just stirs up those memories and just can't let her escape it, because it must be 18 months on. The baby's obviously been born and about a year old or something, you know, it's at least a year on.
And Tommy knows what he's doing, because by this point he knows Ellie, and he knows that as soon as he says what he says and he dangles that carrot in front of her, he knows she's going to follow him. He knows
he's wrecked his marriage, hasn't he? His life is kind of over, so you just wonder whether he's just stirring the pot a little bit. His motives, he's an interesting character. You don't get to know him that much, obviously. He's obviously got the background with the Fireflies, and, you know, he does go to and avenge Joel, and he has infinite bullets in his sniper rifle, which is something else when you're trying to track him down on that bridge.
But it's cool, that bit, because wherever you go, you're always
in his line of fire.
Like an hour behind Tommy.
It's great.
When you're in the hotel with Dina and you find that guy that he's been questioning in inverted commas, he's just absolutely mutilated. And Dina's like, what the fuck? And Ellie's like, this is Tommy.
This is Tommy's work, because him and Joel used to torture
people.
Yeah, used to interrogate people, which essentially means they're not the nicest of brothers. But it was, I mean, it's something else as a game experience. And the backlash to it, is it just, you think, your fanboys, or do you think people have got some legitimate reasoning for, I don't know. I don't think they do. I think it's quite incredible game to play. But do you think the developers could have gone a different way? I mean, and been as successful, or do you think this is the best game they could have made?
It's hard to say. The only way I could really quantify that is if you were to come out and, you know, give alternate ideas. I can't think of anything, either from a gameplay or a storyline point of view, that I would say, oh, well, I really wish they'd done that differently, or, well, that bit sucked. I didn't have any problem. A lot of people had problems with the Lev stuff, with it being about essentially a transgender child. Mm. I couldn't care less about that, because if anything, it was, I sort of interpreted it as, even in a post-apocalyptic world, people still have the same societal hang-ups as people do now.
Yeah.
But if the worst thing you can find about the game is you disagree with a girl who's cut her hair off and wants to be seen as a boy, and the cult that she lives with has a problem with that and thinks she's an abomination.
Or the other aspect of it is a female-fronted hero, do you know what I mean, who's openly gay. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure.
I honestly couldn't care less. It's not like it's...
Of course we don't care, because we're
I think the controversy over that is, people, if she wasn't the main character, it would have been a side story, and people still would have been offended by the side story, because we already knew this about Ellie because of that add-on they had for the first game.
And you have to give this game props that they... Obviously.
When she was in the mall with her friend who was due to be going off to the Fireflies and ended up getting chomped. So we already knew that Ellie was gay. This isn't a revelation. It's just now she's openly gay. And as you mentioned before, Dina clearly loves pushing the buttons of that redneck fucker that owns the bar.
Oh, yeah.
She knows full well that it's going to get under his skin, and she's doing it just to make him squirm.
I know. I mean, that's what I liked about Dina. She was such a brilliant character. I think I would have liked to see a bit more of Jesse. He was obviously in quite a limited capacity, but again, you know, likable character in what we got.
It was
the
good.
Same a little bit with Abby's sidekicks a little bit. Manny was quite a cool guy, and he got a little bit of his, obviously, sleeping around and stuff that he got up to, but he was quite an interesting dude. But you didn't get much of them.
When Jesse joined up with Ellie and Dean, when you had the three of them together, because it felt a little bit more homely for them.
Yeah.
Because they were able to sort of comfort each other, and obviously then the baby stuff comes up.
I mean,
up.
Jesse's a cool guy. He was so cool about them being in a relationship despite Dina being pregnant and all the rest of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was a cool guy with it. And as I said,
and he was very much a big brother figure, wasn't he? He was always looking out for Ellie, and he saved her life that moment when he pulls her into the house just as she's about to get presumably shot to shit by a patrol.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you had the sequences, as I said, with Manny, who was quite heavily involved in the sniper section, and then Tommy just offed him. And that's the thing this game did. It disposes of people like...
Pulls no punches.
Yeah, it just like they're gone. Do you know what I mean? There's no lingering. You know, Abby gets a second to breathe and then smash through a door because Tommy had just shot her, one of her closest friends. Do you know what I mean? And it's the same with Ellie. She gets a moment to breathe as... You know, Jesse's shot through the face by Abby in the theater. You just don't get a second to kind of. That's why this game is such an intense experience.
Don't
to play
get any time to process it, do you? It's one hit after another.
And the amazing thing about that is that those hits still feel powerful. And in films, when it's done like that, you just like, well, they've just thrown that away. Like, we said issues with The Rise of Skywalker where you think Chewie's dead and then 10 seconds later, you know, he's fine. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you didn't feel that emotion. It doesn't hit you because it's not left long enough. Whereas this game, I don't know, everything hurts and everything feels as real as it could possibly feel in a video game. So it really does, you know, hit on all those emotional notes, like for all levels. And even the nicer notes, like we mentioned, the stuff with Dina and Ellie when they're getting stoned, and the sequences and flashbacks with Joel and Ellie in the museum, and some of the nicer moments. She had that moment with Tommy, obviously, before.
When he's training with the gun.
Yeah, and just there's moments in there that still have heart and have hope for things. And even poor old Abby actually being enthusiastic when she thought she'd found the Fireflies, which she might have done. It was just that she got stung by those people who might have been listening in. Do you know what I mean? It's tricky to know what that meant at the end of the sequence with her in Santa Barbara. I think they were just a faction that were in the area. It doesn't mean the Fireflies don't exist. But I can't see a third game, can you? I mean, I just can't see it. They've said they won't, but I don't know.
It would be difficult without... It was always going to be hard for them to make a second game without it feeling like the first.
Yeah.
But now it would be even more hard for a third game to not feel like the second or the first. They'd have to make it so far removed that maybe then it disappears up its own arse and doesn't feel like a Last of Us game.
I know you've not played Lost Legacy, but that is an Uncharted game without Nathan Drake, basically. But it still plays well enough to being in that world, do you know what I mean, in the adventure kind of style category. You know, there's enough there that makes it relate, so I do wonder whether there's capacity to do a game
of
different characters or Lev in the future, or do you know what I mean, maybe something.
Put it this
different.
way, if they do, and let's be honest, based on this, I wouldn't expect to see it this side of, you know, 2025 at the earliest.
I
would be very, very surprised if it featured anyone from Jacksonville. I think we've seen the last of Ellie as a character, maybe not as like a name or a reference.
No.
But I don't think we will see her again. I would be interested to see Abby again, because I thought by the end of the game, you get a much better feel about who she is and her motivations. It's like we said about Black Panther with Killmonger.
Yeah.
You like him as a villain because you understand what he's trying to do. And I liked Abby because I really understood why she hated Joel and she hated everything that community stood for. But by the end of it, she's a completely different person. She's now become maybe not like a surrogate mother to Lev, but she's become like a big sister type, hasn't she? She's got somebody else to look out for. And she's maybe gone back to that point in her life that you talked about with Owen, where she was afraid to take that step and actually let herself be happy. Maybe now she can with Lev, but it's now is life going to catch up with her the way it caught up with Joel and Ellie? You know, why would they introduce the Rattlers for just an hour or two of gameplay if they weren't going to come in? That if they didn't introduce them, I would have said, you know what, it feels like an ending. But to introduce a new faction like that, it just felt like maybe even like a test screen, and like they're just putting the feelers out there, see yeah. what perception is. And then in a couple of years.
And also the Firefly thing, you can't get away from the fact that the Fireflies were heavily mentioned and talked about.
Which obviously. I really like, because now you kind of, we in the first game, Joel and Ellie, all they knew is the Fireflies were the bad guys.
Yeah.
Sorry, they were like these mythical, like they were this mythical.
They were on a search for them, obviously, for the whole game, basically.
Yeah, and then you find them and you find out that they're real, but then they're trying to get the cure, and then you realise that they're not actually that nice, because they obviously...
Well, Marlene was kind of, despite almost having raised Ellie for a long period of time, was ready to sacrifice
basically
her.
Basically cultivating her, wasn't she, for yeah. a cure? So she was a bit horrible.
Yeah.
But then again, you start sort of coming around and thinking, well, they're surely much nicer than the wolves and the Seraphites. And are they that bad? And could they be different under different leadership? And I'm not expecting a game, but I wasn't expecting a sequel. I thought The Last of Us would remain just a one-hit wonder.
And it didn't necessarily need one, right?
No.
I think it ends, it's a perfectly neat and concise wrapped-up game.
It ends on such a note. It wasn't like a cliffhanger where you sort of... you're constantly waiting around for that next installment. Whereas now, this feels more like they could do a sequel more than the end of one.
It does.
Because finite.
Because they've obviously opened the world out a little bit more. You've understood more than just smaller groups of people. Do you know what I mean? You know, you obviously did have the cannibals along with all the... you know, the Fireflies and stuff in the first game and the army and whatnot. But this is more rounded. You get more interpretation of different, of a complete world or a complete America anyway. Do you know what I mean?
So more a personal game. There's a lot more human development than there is.
Yeah. Infinitely more. I mean, obviously, because it's a double the size at least. Do you know what I mean? So there's a lot more to do in this game in terms of development. But yeah, I would welcome another game. And I didn't think I necessarily needed this game, but I kind of, until maybe about a week ago, I haven't really stopped thinking about it. I mean, I know you've been playing a new game since, but it does stick in your head. Even when you're going to bed after playing it, you're kind of thinking about the next experience you're going to have on it, because it is such an overwhelming kind of experience.
It's a very hard game to stop playing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of times when I would be playing it before going to bed, and I would be saying to myself, and sometimes even to Michelle, she'd be saying, are you going to come to bed soon? Are you going to turn the light off? And I'd be like, yeah, I'll just do it at the end of this bit. Then I'd get to the end of a section and thinking, yeah, but now I know I've got to go in that building and do this bit. And I find myself putting another hour in, and then I'm going to bed and I'm struggling to decompress because I've been so edge and so worked up. And then it's like, right, close your eyes, go to bed. And I'm thinking, no, because now I'm thinking, right, tomorrow I've got to go in that building, I've got to do that thing.
I had a couple of Last of Us dreams, which were quite intense, I must admit, to be honest, because I'd been playing and it just gets stuck in your cycle. And as I said, even after completing it, you know, all the content, discussing it with people regularly, I don't think I've discussed a game as much as this, because I think things like Red Dead...
We were talking about it basically every day. You were fucking hounding me. Have you played it again? Have you played it again? Have you played it?
I mean, and then we wait 3 weeks to do a podcast, which is just classic us. But I mean, it's just such... Brand. Yeah, it is on brand. That said, amazing game, amazing experience. Cannot wait for the TV show when that gets developed.
It's got to be winning some awards. I will be gobsmacked if in the next Game Awards, Ashley Johnson isn't getting a voiceover.
She is amazing.
She's got to be nailed on.
Troy Baker's only briefly in this, but you've got to give props to Laura Bailey as well, because, I mean, what she does with Abby is quite...
All three women are brilliant. And when you see, if you follow either of Ashley Johnson or Shannon Woodward online, you see the behind-the-scenes footage.
It's amazing.
And all the pictures. They've basically become best friends because they were so long. They were doing all the mocap and the vocal work. They're spending so much time together, and especially when they're playing characters that are romantically involved and they're going through this huge traumatic emotional experience.
Because they're going through it too. Yeah,
yeah.
They're
crying at these moments when the characters are crying. So they're emotional.
I've heard Ashley Johnson talking about the sequences with Joel, and she can barely keep her emotions now.
She's sobbing her heart out.
I know. I mean, you know, that's what it means to her after all these years. And it's just a part, but she to her, Ellie. It's not. Yeah, exactly.
I think she's only done two games.
I know.
But she is Ellie in the same way that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man and Chris Evans is Captain America. It's just, it's outstanding work.
And that's what I mean. You can call it divisive and you can have issues with X, Y, and Z, but the way this game plays and the notes it hits emotionally, if you like them or not, it still is making you talk about it. It's still making you think about it. Do you know what I mean? It's not.
I'm surprised if everyone who plays this game doesn't have one single solitary moment where you think, whoa.
What have I just played? Just, do you know what I mean?
One scene, one sequence in the whole 30 to 40 hours. Just think, oh my god, what was that?
Because there's so many games you can just play that are just, they're great and they're fun and they're good experiences. Yeah, but they don't linger with you, or they don't make you question anything, or they don't challenge you.
One of my favorite games that I've ever played, but it doesn't resonate with me.
No, of course not.
It doesn't hit me in any way, shape, or form like this does.
No, not at all. There's no way it would do. It's a great fun experience, but it's not. And it's a feat, and it plays really well.
It's not emotional in the way this is.
It doesn't deliver a story. And that's what mainly Spider-Man was lacking, was a really good narrative and a story, actually. I think that's all it needs to improve on, and just, you know, to you know, be more, I don't know, just to be better, you know, to take that next step as a game. And that's what Naughty Dog have done. And they did it with Uncharted, but they've maxed it with you know, these two games, because they are pushing boundaries that no one else has pushed.
To me, to think how they could improve further on this, because the mocap work is unbelievable. The way the face is
looked, just phenomenal.
The way Ellie's hands move when she's playing guitar are staggering, and I just don't understand how they could
just go. The way they use the controller just to strum the guitar and stuff, those little touches are just, and like you said, it's not just that, it's the inclusivity. Even that, I had an interview where they've geared it up so people with sight problems can play more, and they've done things with the controller which people, you know, people that have, they've just made it more accessible to more people than a game has ever been before. You know, they genuinely care about the whole audience that they can meet. And I just don't think any other studios just go to the degrees that they've gone to. I don't know. I can't really find a flaw when you put it all in context. You know, it's just, I think they probably delivered 2 10 out of 10 games, which, I mean, is a studio ever really done that back to back? I just don't know if they have. Not really.
Off the top of my head, I struggle to think.
Maybe Rockstar have along the way, but it's very, very, very difficult. You know,
I mean, I can think of things like Mass Effect 2 and 3 were outstanding. Assassin's Creed 2 into whichever one came after that, was it Brotherhood, was outstanding. But again, not on the emotional level.
Not the depth that they just get to in these games. Never really been seen before. And, you know, Naughty Dog, like a lot of other studios that are owned or linked with Sony, are just incredible right now. Do you know what I mean? Just producing things that are just beyond what I kind of imagine games could ever be, to be honest. I never thought they would get to a level of storytelling like they've done. It's just quite remarkable, where these can be converted into films or TV shows and have a script to hold up to a TV show of HBO standard. Do you know what I mean? They can meet that level. When have you ever seen that from a game before? They always have a good action set piece, but, you know, Resident Evil will obviously fall flat because it's just not got any kind of depth, or, you know. So it's just, yeah, quite incredible work by everyone involved at the studio. And I think the outcries and stuff were just absolutely laughable, to be honest, when you put it in context. I mean, how can people criticize the work that's gone into this game? It's just unbelievable.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
You can see how many hours have gone into it. Just unbelievable work. It's fantastic. And it was great talking about it. I'm glad we did get around to doing it. I would have regretted if we hadn't. We have both watched Umbrella Academy season 2, which, have you finished it?
No, I've got two episodes left.
You've got two incredible episodes.
I wanted to watch them today, but I had a massive long team meeting this morning.
Yeah.
And then I had another one this afternoon, so I really haven't had a chance.
I think once you're done with them, you might want to talk about it. Obviously, we talked about season one, and I would love to talk about season two. So
I'll tell you what, we will get season two episode done as soon as I'm finished, so it's all fresh in the memory, because we wanted to do this earlier. But it's just not always possible, is it, with families being
around? No, there's some capacity
shite,
to squeeze
in
a couple of pods, so we can actually get a couple out in the next 2 weeks for a change, which would be good.
I'm hoping to get this one released, by the time you guys listen to it, it'll be out. But I'm hoping that within a couple of days of this being released, I'll have finished Umbrella Academy Series 2. So I reckon we should hopefully have another episode within a week.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And then, you know, we'll see what comes. The problem with this year is it's just so erratic in terms of releases. We've got no big Marvel stuff, any kind of major.
I've resigned myself to the fact that I'm not going to be going to see Tenet.
I think I will go to the IMAX and sit on my own on an early showing someday. Yeah, but we'll see.
I really want to, because it's just, I was explaining to Michelle and she said, what's it about? And I went, No one knows.
That's why it's a Nolan special. It's like Inception. No one has a clue what's going to happen.
She couldn't comprehend it. And I said, but because it's an IMAX film, it's a trailer.
It's Nolan.
Shot in IMAX.
I know. I watched the teaser that came before Rise of Skywalker in the IMAX, and it was just like, it's amazing,
like a
thing.
3 minute trailer or
something. Yeah, it's like 5 minutes of the film or something. It was just
me
amazing.
And Tom sat there like, I don't know what the fuck this is, but it looks incredible.
It's just Nolan in his perfect, you know, it's going to be something else.
It would be like you've said, it'd be something like 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, sadly on my own, wearing a mask, not eating or drinking anything.
Yeah, I know.
Bathing in anti-bac hand wash when I get home.
Just go in a bubble. Just go in one giant inflatable
bubble.
Get
one of those Zorbs that people go in down hills in.
Love to see you in the printworks in a Zorb.
Yeah, I could do that. I could make it work.
Yeah. Anything to recommend before we close shop for today?
I'll do a few. Game, if you haven't played this, why are you listening?
I know.
Ghost of Tsushima is absolutely
unreal,
and I can't wait to talk about that. Umbrella Academy, you should definitely be watching. The Boys Series 2 is coming out in about 6 weeks or something.
I know, not soon enough, no.
And you'll probably disapprove of this, but me and Michelle are always looking for little 20-minute shows to watch while we're eating, and we've just done the first season of The Goldbergs.
No idea what it is, but that's cool.
I absolutely love it. It's just it's a comedy, but it's set from the point of view of the guy that wrote it and produces it. It's telling exaggerated stories from his childhood about his real life family. And it's just
mine. 20 minute comedies, man. Nothing wrong with those.
It's all on Channel 4's on demand. So I've been recommending that, even though a lot of people will be like, it's just like Big Bang Theory and Big Bang Theory shit. Yeah, well, I love it. So up your pipe. There you go. What about you? Anything to recommend?
Like what have I been watching? So, you know, I watch so much TV, and then I've kind of had to take a bit of a pause. I've been watching films again a little bit. I did watch quite a lot of The Last Kingdom, which is a bit like Vikings. It was BBC, but then Netflix bought the rights to it.
That popped up the other day on my Netflix thing.
Yeah, so it's all on Netflix because they produce seasons 3 and 4, but it was originally a BBC production. It's good, man. It's that kind of, it's a bit like Vikings, where it's kind of historically relatively
is it a bit
accurate.
Funny than Vikings?
It's a bit what?
Basically just Game of Thrones level of porn.
It's not actually. They do mention humping quite a lot, which I assume was quite.
They say humping.
Yes, they do, which makes me laugh so much. But actually, it's pretty likable stuff. I think you'd like it. It's a pretty good watch. What else have I been doing? You know, I don't know. I can't think what I've been watching or playing. As I said, I've been playing a little bit more PS4 as you know, a lot of kind of down the Uncharted rabbit hole, which has been fun because those games are just so well produced.
Well, 4 games.
Well, I didn't. I only played 4, and I played Lost Legacy because I just thought I'm not going to get around to 1, 2, and 3 again.
I've got all of them downloaded from PS Plus. They've got the Nathan Drake trilogy, which is and then four. So I've got
them. I've played them in the past, but I just, you know, I just had to play four again because four is the most accomplished. It's the most recent. And then Lost Legacy is a really good little, yeah, it's like a side note. It's, you know what, it's not going to be that dissimilar, I think, from the Miles Morales Spider-Man style of game, where obviously that might be a longer game, but it is a little bit like a bit of a spin-off in the same games engine, you know. Yeah, exactly. So we're interested what Naughty Dog actually come to produce next. But no, I'm always out for recommendations. We will talk Umbrella Academy Season 2, which I have absolutely adored, I must admit. But The Boys is what I'm really waiting for. Because it's been a bit of a barren year for our kind of style of show. Do you know what I mean? There's not been a lot of great new TV stuff. So it is a bit of a case of going back to older things. But I still haven't got around to some of the big hitters like The Wire, because I just haven't got 8 seasons, 80 hours of telly in me right now. Do you know what I mean? So it's finding those things that are a little bit shorter. Although I did finish Better Call Saul a while back, and that was fantastic. If you ever did watch Breaking Bad, you just have to get around to it. But
I think I'm past the point of no return with Breaking Bad.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you can't commit to something that's 7 seasons all the time, because it's just such a big commitment. It takes up, for you that watches multiple things, it means kind of just focusing on one show, and it's hard for you to do that. Like, it's such a big commitment. So, yeah, I'll try and find other things, but it's just movies. There was a film, which I will tell you about, called Palm Springs, and it's my favourite film of the year. Not that there's been a lot of competition.
I was going to say, there's only been about 3 films this year.
But it's
anyway.
A comedy starring Andy Samberg of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Christine Milioti, who is the mother.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it advertised somewhere.
And J.K. Simmons, who we all love, who's quite a small part in it, but he's brilliant. And it's a comedy, but it's set around Groundhog Day of sorts, and a little bit like the Netflix TV show, which I can't remember the name of, starring your woman from Orange is the New Black and American Pie, Russian something or other. Why can't I remember anything? Anyway, it's a really good concept, and it's kind of got that slightly nicer, it's a kind of offbeat rom-com, but quite dark humor in there. One of the best 90-minute films I've watched in quite a long time. And it's available in Hulu in the States, so we don't have it yet. But, you know, if you're resourceful, maybe you can find a way to watch it. But me and Laura sat down and watched it, and I watched it another time, and we both had a great time watching it. It's a really funny, well-done, well-produced film, and both of them, but her in particular, I just would watch her in anything.
I love Andy Samberg.
Yeah,
between
exactly.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Lonely Island, he's got me.
He's great in this. He's quite over the top in obviously Nine-Nine, but in this he just plays it down a little bit, and it works really, really well. He is brilliant in this. I think you would love this film, actually. I think it's right up your, you know, cup of tea. So I think everyone should check that out. And I trying to find new movies to watch. It's quite a tricky thing this year, let's put it that way. So yeah, we'll just have to see what happens. But yeah, Tenet looks like it'll get released, and then hopefully maybe get June later on in the year. But it's going to be a barren year, no Marvel or Pixar, I don't think, till next year. So we'll just have to wait and see. But funny old year, but we're still going, so that's all I can say. But yeah, it was great to record this. It's been a lot of fun, and
apologies for the fact that this is the longest episode we've ever done.
God, is it like 2 hours?
Yeah, basically. So if you've managed to stay with us, I think we owe you a Diet Coke or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
possibly a couple of paracetamol.
We'll give you, you know, we could have broken it into 2 pods and whatnot, but it's just one of those games.
That's just too much effort for me, and you should know by now I'm so lazy.
I mean, us giving you a podcast 4 weeks late, but it is 2 hours of content. So if you like it, do like it and share it. You know where we are on all social media platforms. We don't interact as much as we used to, but you know, we're always there if you need a recommendation.
Or
you want to
lurk in the background watching you, like a creepy dog, watching on the toilet, judging you silently, but never really saying anything until the snacks come out.
On that note, we will be back with you hopefully in the next couple of weeks.